Hello and welcome to How to Deal with Grief and Trauma. My name is Natalie Himmelrich.
How to Deal with Grief and Trauma is completely self-funded, produced and edited by me, Natalie Himmelrich. Consider making a small donation to support the podcast. Go to bit.ly/support, G, T, and podcast. I repeat, bit.ly/support GT podcast. Thank you so much. And for more information, please visit Natalie's website, join the podcast Instagram page, and subscribe to the newsletter to receive updates on future episodes.
I have known Coco personally since we studied somatic experience, Peter Levine's extensive professional trauma training, together. I have accompanied her as she dealt with the intensive relationship with her mother and the grief over her mother's subsequent death. From a young age, in fact for half of her own life, Coco cared for her mother and had to be the one to make decisions regarding her mother's care in the 23-year-long battle with cancer and mental health issues. About this week's guest, Coco Buchmann is a body psychotherapist and trauma therapist. She's also the mother of two boys, 11 and 8 years old. She originally studied improvisation and contemporary dance and later added clinical psychology, integrative body psychotherapy, and somatic experience to her repertoire. Most recently, she finished her yoga teacher's training, which she practices in her daily life besides dance and Tao yoga, Qigong. As a therapist, Coco has been working with individuals dealing with mental illness such as depression and anxiety, and she also works with couples. 18 months ago, she started a sabbatical to delve into her own grieving process and to follow her destiny and passion to write a book about the expression of the true self and aliveness, a process which she has coined Yoga Wave. Coco experienced many kinds of losses and traumas in her life on a physical, emotional and spiritual level, which you'll hear in today's episode. Over the past 20 years, she has been obsessed with finding the connection between trauma, loss and the nervous system, and has been investigating the deeper layers of the soul and the energies in the body. So welcome, Coco. It's so nice to have a podcast time with you. I'm so glad that you offered to be my guest. How are you today?
Thank you, Natalie. I feel honored to be here and to talk about my story and to share it with the community. And I'm very excited and very nervous. My heart is beating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's completely understandable. And I was actually just today, I was preparing for my 1 year podcast anniversary episode in which I'm going to share my personal story in a little bit more details. And I could so relate to what you're just saying about what is going to come out? What is she going to ask me? Where am I going to go with that? And I felt this, like this pit in my stomach, a bit of dread coming up in relation to that. And it was the first time that I could really relate to certain people's nervousness about being a guest here. But why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about your story of loss and trauma?
Yes. So for me, it was almost a therapeutic effect when I was thinking about the podcast and thinking about the whole lifespan of my experiences with loss and trauma, and to see again, like the mainstream flowing through all that experiences. And I would like to talk about today three different events of my childhood. One is in my early childhood, alas, and then one is in my teenager years, where I experienced something which was associated with a big shock in a way. And then later on in my early adulthood, there is also a period, a long period of time, where I was challenged with the loss.
And as the listener know, me and Coco are friends and we have studied together. So I know a little bit of your story. Usually I don't even prepare for my guests in the sense of not wanting to know their stories, because I want to be like the listeners who is listening to this story that you're sharing for the first time. But in your case, I know little bits of what you have been sharing with me in the time that we've known each other. But I'm really interested in what you're sharing today.
Yes, I maybe can start with my early childhood, where I experienced that my parents, they were not good together. They had a lot of fights, and then they decided to divorce. And I was 3.5 years old, and it was for me like an earthquake for my safe place, and to lose the safe place and to lose parents as a place of protection. And yeah, I think the divorce was just, in a way, the quality of divorcing was traumatic, because there were so many sides and my nerve system got so activated, and I was always I had a lot of anxieties, and my mother went into a depression, and my father went away, and I was not, I didn't get what happened, really. I didn't understand what happened. And so I think there at this moment, this grief about losing my father couldn't really be felt. It was just like chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I had no place where I could process this grief. But the grief stayed inside, and also anxieties of losing somebody, and the anxiety of maybe losing somebody very close, and losing my partner or losing my kids. So this was like an imprint, the first imprint of I will lose the closest person, which was like a belief which was built on from this day on. And the grief like was not processed, so I think it was like encapsulated in me, and it just stays for years inside. And I went on with my life, and I developed like some protection strategies. Exactly, like I was a very overactive person, so I did a lot of things in my life. I was always running. I never was walking. I always was running. I played the piano, I played the cello, I played the saxophone, I went to dance school. I was in a singing choir. I had a lot of friends. So I was always running around. And I developed like a personality, like the talented child, which all around me thought I'm very happy, I'm very talented, and so on and so on. And I also felt lively, but inside the grief was always like, it was like sleeping in me.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, it came more and more to the surface. Yeah.
So when did you know that this grief was encapsulated in you, and when did it come out, and how did you know then that this is grief?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because when I was in my teenager ages, I met a boy, and he got my boyfriend, and I really had a lot of conflicts with my mother at that time. And then he came from a family, they were very religious, and he was raised by praying and reading the Bible and believing in Jesus, but he forgot about that. And when I had all these conflicts, he started to tell me about Jesus, about the Bible, about his belief. And then he took me to this church, and at that time, I felt the grief the first time really bubbling up in me and coming out, and I didn't understand why I was crying all the time while I was in this church. When they were praying for me, I was crying. Mm. When they were writing from the Bible, I was crying. When we did workshops, and I couldn't understand why I'm always there crying. Mm-hmm. So the grief really went to the surface. And I, for the first time, I had like people around me. They were really, yeah, they understood my story, also about family. They knew that my family was broken and they supported me and they prayed for me. So I felt like a new family. Mm-hmm. I felt being held and protected by this family. And I built on this philosophy or this religion. I built on what they said about Jesus, about the Bible, and also that Jesus will come back one day. I was like, yeah, I think it was like an image of the Father coming back and mm-hmm. and giving me the love and the affection I missed in my early childhood. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so grieving was a part of being in that church, also social engagement, like this support. And for me at that time, it was a great thing because I don't know how the grief would come out otherwise. Mm-hmm. So I had no place for it. But then the problem or the big shock in it was that this family, this new family for me, there has been a person, a preacher for the youngsters, and he was like meeting me also alone, and we prayed together for things in my life. And there was one meeting with him where he crossed in a sexual abuse way, he crossed the borders. And where suddenly, like I was 18 years old, where suddenly this holy place, this holy space outside of me, but also inside of me, like I believed so much in this religion and in all what he said, was broken down in 1 second.
That was a shock that you alluded to.
This was the shock for my nervous system to lose.
Completely understand.
In a way, to lose, like it was a disillusion mm-hmm. of what will come, of what I can trust on, what I can rely on. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was always almost like the God himself did something to me. Mm-hmm. So the shock was huge because then I wanted to go home, but I didn't find my way home. So I was such disoriented in my head that I was lost in the city. Fortunately, I went to a woman, and she took me at her home, and I knew her a little bit, and she was also a psychologist. And then 3 hours later, so 3 hours I could not speak. I was there like I didn't speak. And she wanted to know what happened. And she had like 3 or 4 hours until I managed to speak out what happened. And I already almost forgot about it in these hours. So I really had a hard time to remember what happened 1 hour before. Mm-hmm. The next days or weeks, I was numb. I was not really here. And I tried to go back to my initial strategies to be overactive. And I had to finish my high school. And I started a dance school, and I was dancing the whole day. So I was really occupied with moving all the time, mm-hmm. 24 hours a day.
And as the two of us know, movement mm-hmm. or moving your legs is associated a little bit with running, Would you say that dancing was a way for you to run away from being inside or being feeling what was going on or remembering, like a traumatic, like a response from that towards that trauma?
I think dancing for me was, first of all, a way I wanted to come back to my body.
Okay.
I wanted to come back to the integrate the body and the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt dancing will be a place where I can heal.
Mm-hmm.
And I still believe that. But at that time in this education and this school was very it was like perfection. You have to be perfect. You have to dance perfect. It's a profession. So the results were not healing. The results were more activation in my body.
Mm-hmm.
It was not what I thought of. So the nerve system was more activated through that dance school, I think. And also after the dance school, I think it was like a little burnout.
Mm-hmm.
After this dance school. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've spoken about the chronically dysregulated nervous system before on the podcast. So those who've listened to previous episodes, they know. But after trauma, the baseline as to where the nervous system is going through from activation to deactivation, that baseline is often moved higher to the place where either it spikes up really quickly. Someone is getting activated really quickly and is getting agitated, or it's just on a higher level, basically rarely in rest and digest, but very often in activation and meandering through the top line. So being stuck on, it's called as well.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you deal with that trauma of that sexual abuse and that loss of a new family, that loss of faith? Did you go back to the church, or did you move away from that, or how did you deal with that? I mean, you said that you were taken care of hopefully well by this woman who took you in and you lived with her, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
How did you deal with that, or who helped you deal with it, or what helped you deal with it?
Yeah, I think there were many things helping me at that time, because I think there I was on the zero point of my life. So one of the zero points, and almost what helped me was my creativity, like painting my feelings and writing, journaling. I write a lot of letters to those people, and I also find a new place to live with a family, which, like, there were people they took like out of the street. They took persons which were not capable to live for themselves, so I could go there in this house, and they looked for me, they looked after me. I could speak with them always when I had the longing for, and I think also there has been the contact with those family, with those two person, that I always could talk to them, and that they were also psychologists, and that they really tried to go with me through all that emotions which come up.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they were anger or sadness. And that was I had a lot of anger inside me, and I went a lot to the nature.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, like, the going to therapy for me there was very important.
Okay.
Was a big core of helping for me.
Okay, so you went to therapy after that incident.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think that's what led you to choose your profession?
Yeah, I think it was one of the reasons why after I studied psychology and I went to this direction, but I always was interested in it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then I think what the thing was there, the dancing also helped me with not with dealing with the emotions, but with not feeling emotions. It was it was a protection for me, not feeling the emotions. In the third year of this dancing school, my mother called me and she was herself in a shock. I had not so much interaction with her at that time. She was alone. She had no partner and she was searching for a partner and she wanted to start her life new. And then she got diagnosed by a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And for her was a big shock because she knew she had to operate it and to all the medical stuff around it. And I was in this state I mentioned before, like this activated state. I never rested or digested. I was like 24 hours on the streets. So, and this shock, then even I felt in my body, now the grief is just collapsing down one stage more into my organs.
Okay.
I felt after that phone call, I felt it like the grief really dropping in my stomach, in my organs. Mm-hmm. And from that day on, I had a lot of syndromes in my stomach. I had digestion problems. I had a lot of problems with, I thought maybe I got cancer too.
How old were you at that time?
At that time, I was 23 years old.
Okay. Yeah. So obviously a big shock for you as well. If your mother has just another big shock of herself, understandably you carried that shock as well. How imminent was it when she got the diagnosis of cancer? Like, what kind of a diagnosis was it? Did they give her a lifespan, or what kind of diagnosis would it be? So that gives an idea of people who are also dealing with cancer.
Yes, so she got this colon cancer, mm-hmm. down on the colon, really at the end. And she also got like this liver cancer, like mm-hmm. the metastasis in the liver, mm-hmm. a few. And the doctor said to me, not to her, but to me, they said, yes, your mother will die in 3 months.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They didn't say it to her.
They didn't say it to her.
Okay.
Yes. I was like, because she had no partner, I was mm-hmm. like the only child. So
the we next
were
of
like
kin.
Almost one together. So mm-hmm. they always talked to me. So the doctors also, when they had problems with her later on, when she was like very depressed and she got like a psychosis, then they always talked with me. They mm-hmm. asked me, what should we do?
You were the next of kin, the only person in her family that...
Exactly. Yeah. Only me and... no other person was close to her and could decide.
That's a big responsibility for a 23-year-old. That's huge.
Yes. And I always felt this, like this heaviness of this responsibility.
Mm, understandably,
Like my student colleagues, they were having parties mm-hmm. and they enjoyed life. And I had... like thoughts of death all the days. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I was like inside, I was so, busy with thinking about life and death at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not part of that student life.
Mm-hmm. I remember many of my guests who have lost parents at a young age, young adult stage. It is very disconcerting and disorienting because that's like a different state in your life, as you describe, as a student. And then you have certain responsibility and certain things to think about and deal with that are just not in the timeline as a normal adult would be, as a young adult would be in.
Mm.
And so not many people can relate to it. It's like, yeah, death is on the table, but no one else is like, what? No.
Yes, and sometimes there were big decisions to take.
Mm-hmm.
So like... when she was very depressed, then we had to decide, because she didn't eat anymore and she didn't mm-hmm. drink anymore. So we had to decide whether she will die at home or we take her to the clinic.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. psychiatric clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to decide what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And after in the clinic, they asked me, we have problems with your mother, and what should we do if she don't breathe anymore? And so I had to decide always what they had to do.
And so you were left alone making these decisions. There was no one around you that...
No. I had an aunt, and she sometimes came to our town, and we visited her together once. I felt completely alone with that burden.
So that was her sister,
aunt. And I felt like the doctors and the medicines, they were so helpless mm-hmm. with her, because she was a client. She was medically, physically, she was ill. She needed treatment because of the cancer. But her psyche was so disturbed. These psychoses were so heavy that she jumped out of the windows and stuff. Mm-hmm. And she needed medical help in a sense of psychiatric medication mm-hmm. and clinics. And
so one side was the cancer, on the other side was mental illness coming
exactly.
together.
And her nerve system, like a big storm of trauma energy around her. Like mm-hmm. she was like disappearing in this storm of trauma energy.
Mm-hmm.
Like just like very, very, very activated people around her, helpless people around her. They did not know how to deal with her. In the hospital, she shouted the whole night.
Mm-hmm.
And in the psychiatry, they needed treatments for her, for her state, for her medical state. So she kind of was not in one or the other place.
She was only in the right place. Of that really fit.
She was always in the right place. And mm-hmm. nobody knew how to deal with the one or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then she didn't die. As much as I know from your story, she didn't die within 3 months. What happened?
Yes. So what happened was that I think instinctively she felt that not eating would help her body. And it's my hypothesis that she almost, by not eating, the cancer cells were on diet.
Mm-hmm.
So in a medical sense, she is a miracle, because after that diagnosis, she lived 24 years.
Wow.
On plus.
Mm-hmm.
And the cancer was like frozen mm-hmm. in her body, because the cancer got no food,
mm-hmm.
no glucose, and the cancer cells, they grow. Their food is glucose.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was one of the parts that helped her overliving bodily.
Mm-hmm.
And from the point of healing, I think she did... she was not doing things which would help to heal, let's say like this.
Mm-hmm.
She did not do therapy. She did not doing stuff like nutrition, like healthy nutrition, nothing at all. So she was lying on the bed all the time. She was not moving. So in a sense of like health span perspective, she did not the things which would help her to overlive.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens was that she got in a state where she had no activation or no interaction with the world anymore, because she did not watch TV, she did not listen to music, she did not play the piano anymore, she did not talk to people, she didn't went out. She was like 20 years encapsulated in her room. And she got medical personal. They came to her, they visited her, they prepared the food, they helped her with going to toilet and so on. But they never reached to really activate her to go back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And I never understood that. I wanted to help her. And as I saw her always like this pain, I was protecting myself from it and I was looking after myself. Mm-hmm. I tried to not go there because it was so painful for me to see that state of living. Mm-hmm. But after she died, I realized that she almost did a 20-year retreat mm-hmm. of meditation. Mm-hmm. But I didn't saw that before. I did not saw inside her what she's processing inside her. Mm-hmm. Something went on, but I didn't knew. And I also didn't knew what medically happened. So a lot of times she was almost dying and she didn't want to see any doctor again. So a lot of situations where I had to go to hospital or I had to be there and I thought she will die, but she didn't. So my grief process was like frozen too. I always thought I have to prepare now of grieving. I have to prepare me for grieving. I started grieving and then she overlived. Mm-hmm. So the grieving process was always like blocked.
So from the age of 23 for 24 years yes. of your life, you yes. basically were in anticipatory grief for the whole yes. time. She yes. survived, then she was almost dying again, then you got some medical care. But then again, so you were in a constant state of limbo in regards to her survival.
Exactly. And she got heart attacks and other personal problems, which she landed on the emergency in the hospital a few times. But yes, she started to live again and again. Mm-hmm. And yes, that was the situation. And then what I don't understand really in my head, but maybe in my heart, is that 5 years before she died, she had a person, a woman was looking after her. And this woman, this was the first time, the first person in my mother's life, which she really trusted on. The first person in her life, really, she was taking care of her. And she was in love with my mother. So they connected so much. She also prayed for my mother because my mother was a very religious person. And these 5 years really healed something in her. It was the best therapy for her.
So this was a caregiver, like a
yes,
person coming to her house, that what you yes. mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Switzerland, we call them Spitigs. Mm-hmm. 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 And this relationship got so strong. They were like sisters together. Mm-hmm. And she started to heal inside. And I don't know what happened, like 5 months before her death, she started to, the trauma dynamic stopped. And she started like to come out of the nowhere. She came out and she showed up. Mm-hmm. Like she was laughing. She was telling stories. She was remembering everything. She was playing the piano again. And all this stuff didn't worked for 20 years of wow. before.
Yeah.
So she couldn't speak properly, but the language came back like perfectly. She also write it perfectly. And she remembered things I even have forgot. Mm-hmm. So I was there with a completely new person. It was like a shock of healing. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand what happened here because it was like a miracle in front of my eyes because I thought always my mother is the most broken person on the world. Mm-hmm.
And you sort of probably got used to the fact that for 20 years she yes. was there, but not really there as your mother.
She was
right?
not there. Mm-hmm. Her soul disappeared in the space. Mm-hmm. And she took a lot of medication like neuroleptica and so on and so on. And luckily the doctor took this medication away. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
And yes, she was with a lot of humor there. I never experienced her like that.
So these were the last 5 years of her life. That's when she came
yeah,
back.
Yeah, this phase or this part was like, I would say 5 months.
Before oh, five her months. Death. Okay.
And 3 months before her death, she was really so funny. Mm-hmm. She was like a really funny person. I had with her the best meeting ever. I think 2 months before she died. And she was, she told me, I'm so good. I feel so good. I never heard this sentence from her.
Sounded like a really healing time, those five months.
It was a really healing time. And when I think of her dying, it's just, I just see a big flower in front of my eyes. Mm-hmm. It was a flower really flourishing. I mean, during life, she had a lot of problems. But in the last months, in the last days, this flower was flourishing. And at the end, she was also physically so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And yes, for me, it was so healing to see that, mm-hmm. and to live that and this peace when she died.
Mm-hmm. And then she died.
Yes. Mm. Yes, she died with this women I told you before. They were there for her. They were singing for her. They were also praying for her. And I was not there. I didn't felt cold. Mm-hmm. I knew she will die. I was on a walk and I really felt my intuition, my instincts. I felt she don't need me now. Mm-hmm. She will do that with those women together. Mm-hmm. This was a holy circle for her. And also afterwards, I felt this holy energy in the room. It was such a relief for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100% relief.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm guessing that living for 25 years with anticipatory grief and having her almost die multiple times and then dying is like a completion of a whole prolonged circle of loss, right?
Yes. Mm. Yes. And from that point on, the blocked grief and the suppressed grief and the not, the unfinished grief. This unfinished business could go now. I could grieve. Now I was able to really dive deep down in the ocean of grief. Mm-hmm. And this was for me like a really big relief to let go and to give up like all the holdings inside me. Mm-hmm. And their somatic experience I have to tell or I have to mention really, as he helped me so much to let go, mm-hmm. and to trust my body in this grieving process.
So how specifically did somatic experience help you? How would you describe that for people listening? And we'll put all those links in the show notes if people want to inquire into somatic experience. But what kind of things specifically helped you if people are looking for those kind of resources?
So the first thing to mention is that the SC therapeut I found for me, it was a very intense feeling, also my instinct, I would say, that she's the right person for me. So choosing her with the big intuition that she can help me was one key of process. Mm-hmm. And then to be in her space and in her presence, I just knew that, I mean, deep inside me, I knew that she knew the land shape of grief and that I don't will get lost in it. That she knows a little bit the land shapes there and the map, mm-hmm. for it, and she will guide me in a good way. So this trust was very, very helpful. And then SE with the somatic awareness in the body, it helped me so much to dive into the grief, because I was trained to hold the grief. I was trained to not feel the grief and to go in overactivation. So to dive into the grief process and to trust the energy in my body and to trust my body that this grief can be processed and this grief can be digested little by little, little portions by little portions, until the big waves of grief went from time to time, the big waves, like these overwhelming waves went lesser and smoother until like they become more little waves and digestible waves. And their somatic experience helped me a lot with that smoothing the,
Yeah, grief is often described as waves, and with time and grief work, these waves become more spaced out and less amplitude. That's very often the experience of grief. What would you want other people? I mean, I think the theme is really this long, drawn out, this anticipatory grief, this 24 years, which seems like a big topic here. What would you want other people who are dealing with a loved one that is has a condition that takes them a long time, but they're, I mean, I had another podcast episode, which I'm going to reference here, which similarly to you, this mother had an accident in her case and she was living for another 20 years, but she was there, but not really there. But what would you want other people to know in that situation? What would you wish them to know?
Yeah, I would wish to let to know them that it's normal to not feel. It's normal to be without feelings, and that they don't feel guilty about that.
Or I think that's really
that they don't feel that they are normal, because the feelings are just frozen. They are there. They are there. But they cannot, because the place is not safe enough, it cannot come out. And so this is a completely normal reaction. And the feelings are can come out later when the space is more safe, even if this is 24 years long, frozen.
I completely agree with you. I think this shock and numbness that is described often is a protection mechanism for the body to feel overwhelmed with the size and the immensity and the flowingness of the overflow of these emotions. So it's a protection mechanism. It's not bad. It's like not now, not that much, please not. And it's a healthy way for a person to know when it is time.
Yes, and I think the way of creativity to let's not speak the words, because with words we don't reach to the dimension of grief. We cannot explain it. And I was always like very, like I was frustrated when I tried to explain it. So I just showed it in pictures, in music, in dancing. Like I tried to put it into creativity or maybe poems. Like this was for me a better way to really show what this is inside, what happens inside.
Well, thank you so much, Coco, for your availability and in expressing your journey. This really intense journey that I knew a little bit about, but actually now I know so much more. Thank you so much for showing up here today and sharing with us.
Yes, thank you, Natalie, for the platform here.
Would it be okay to finish with the rapid fire questions?
Yes, sure.
Okay. So grieving and trauma means?
Means that we come in touch with the deepest core of ourselves and of life.
And healing means?
Healing means that we come to a place of trust, our instincts.
And what I have learned about myself in the light of loss and trauma?
Again, that I can trust in my intuition and in my instincts, and they will guide me, even in the darkest place of my soul.
And what is one thing you wish people knew about loss and trauma?
I wish people knew that the body has the wisdom to come out of the trauma and to heal from trauma. That there is a wisdom in our body and in ourselves for the way to go through and to come out.
And this is what you said before about not overthinking, not overspeaking, but actually trusting the soma, which is the basis of somatic experience, isn't it?
Yes, and very important point there is that I had a lot of times where from outside you would say she's in a big depression. This is a big depression. But as my mind didn't tell me those things like now you're depressed, now again you're grieving, when is that grief over? Now you're lying on the floor and you're 2 hours, you cannot stand up. So I was just going with that energy and I was trusting that at one point I can stand up again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always like this.
Mm-hmm. What is one specific thing that has changed in you since your loss and trauma that you wouldn't want to miss?
One specific thing which has changed that now I can rest and digest. I have found this place where I really can let go, be in a quiet space and really come to a peace, to a place of peace.
Mm.
And to let go of this overactivity and to just be in nature and having the nature as a really, really big resource for me. And also, a passion or almost obsession about this healing process, as I am on the path since a long time, and I did a lot of workshops and educations in this part. And I'm writing a book about aliveness, so this came out of the whole process that I want to share with other people, how you can gain more energy and how can you smooth the nerve system and how you can really feel deeply inside a balanced aliveness. That's the core of the book.
Well, good luck with your book. We're finishing your book.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for your time here.
Thank you so much to invite me. And yes, have a good time.
Thanks for listening to How to Deal with Grief and Trauma. If you'd like to be updated on future episodes, please subscribe to my newsletter on nataliehimmelrich.com. If you need grief support, please contact me for a 30 minutes free discovery session. How to Deal with Grief and Trauma is produced and edited by me, Natalie Himmelrich. To support this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe to or follow the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. And remember to keep reading. I promise it will get easier.